Today on Ag News Daily.
We asked what activities they used farm software for, and then we also gave them a chance to say, I don't use any. It was interesting that only 3% of folks that are under 40 said that they don't use any apps or software at all for farm-related activities.
Well, here we are, March 6th, 2024, Wednesday, hump day, Delaney, halfway through the week.
Halfway through the week. That's hard to believe already. It felt like a very short weekend, as I'm sure it did for you too, coming back from Commodity Classic, but all that excitement. We were busy while we were down there, Tanner.
Yes, very busy, Delaney. We collected a lot of audio and video as we're looking to bring some exciting new changes to the Ag News Daily podcast. We're not going to have any podcasts out next week as we prepare to drop our first episode down the road, right, Delaney?
That's right. We're not going to give too much away, but no podcast next week. And we will announce on Friday of this week what our new announcement is coming down the pipeline, although our listeners might be able to guess it after that, Tanner. So
yeah,
more to come.
We'll be excited to share that. But why don't we jump into the weather headlines here to start off with? We talked about snow hitting the North Dakota region, but now South Dakota friends are experiencing red flag warnings. Parts of South Dakota and western Minnesota are in these warnings. According to the National Weather Service, they are seeing sustained winds of 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 45. And of course, like you talked yesterday, a lot of this country is severely dry. So that could lead to wildfire expansion if fires do get started. We certainly hope that that has not become another issue in the northern plains. They've got relative humidity that will fall below 16%, so any fire that develops will develop rapidly, just like it did in the Texas Panhandle. We'll continue to keep an eye on those as well, but we do see some storms that will move into the Panhandle region tomorrow night. They will bring strong winds as well as a chance for lightning, unfortunately, but other than that, that's about what we have for weather headlines this morning.
Well, Tanner, not necessarily weather headlines, but somewhat weather related is crop conditions. As we look at winter wheat conditions in Kansas and Oklahoma, the biggest producers of winter wheat in the U.S., they were lower week to week, but still stronger compared to last year. About 53% of the Kansas winter crop was in good to excellent condition as of March 3rd. That's down from 57% the week prior, but well ahead of where we were this time last year at just 17% good to excellent. 65% of Oklahoma wheat was rated good to excellent at the start of this week, down from 70% prior, but up from the 2023 number, which pegged us at 39% at this point last year. That certainly has impacted overnight wheat futures here as they're watching those conditions. But all in all, heading into this year's growing season, it does seem things are looking much better for those dry areas that we've seen in years prior.
Yes, most certainly. And back to the point of we were busy at Commodity Classic, so were a lot of different producers. We've got three farmers sharing what they had collected as a benefit from that week. Maryland's Trey Hill stated that he spent some time at the Pivot Bio booth looking to get some plots and trials lined up there. But what he's most excited about is he says he thinks that spraying with drones is probably something that he needs to start implementing, because flying airplanes and helicopters in heavily populated areas, spraying fungicide and insecticide is probably not going to last. So he'd rather be on the front side of adopting new technology for his farm, especially for his daughter, who's getting ready to take over parts of the operation. Says that could be a tool that needs to be in our toolbox. Wyatt, Ohio farmer, Brad Weaver, also farms and stated that he has a heightened awareness for water regulations around the Miami River Valley. He stated that even though he's in a small watershed area from Lake Erie, he's going to continue to keep an eye on that. So he was looking at environmental tillage systems, ETS, and what they did with their strip till technology, stated that it would provide him the opportunity to do everything in one single pass, which could provide his farm some extra levels of efficiency. The third farmer that was in the group came from Evansville, Indiana, Ben Cron, stated that amongst his peers, he could be considered a bit of an oddball. But now what he's looking to do and bring back to his Ohio River Valley farm in southern Indiana is a lot of the New Holland equipment, looking at CR11 combine and the T9 Smart Tracks tractor. Just felt that he had the opportunity to bring extra power and efficiencies to his operation. So kind of neat there, Delaney, seeing a couple of the key things that those three farmers wanted to bring back to their farm.
Well, Sandra, this has been a really interesting, I won't say neat because I think that would be insensitive, but there are some really amazing photos that have been taken while the Texas wildfire rescue support has been going on. As we know, wildfires have continued to rip through the Texas panhandle, now totaling over 1 million acres. But on AgWeb this morning, there are some really astonishing photos that I believe a person from Texas A&M's AgriLife has stepped in and taken some photos to help document this historic event for Texas, and not historic in a great way, obviously, but the photos are just amazing to see all of the people behind the scenes, Tanner, that are putting in their blood, sweat, and tears to really try and fix this problem. Although I'm not sure if it's fixable, but certainly providing support and relief for Texas families and ranchers. But I encourage our listeners to go take a look at some of those photos. It's just titled Images from the Smokehouse Creek Fire. And I think it paints a really amazing behind the scenes tour of all of the folks that are putting in time and energy to help with containment of this thing. So encourage our listeners to go take a look.
Yes, that certainly was pretty touching and moving to go see it. Lots of posts both on X and TikTok of loads of hay being able to continue to slide back down to the south to help these farmers and ranchers that are in a difficult place. Bayer made another announcement after appointing their new CEO 2 weeks ago. They said not now for a division split or sell-off. The company's March 5th news conference that came out, their CEO Bill Anderson outlined the company's four priorities over the next 2 or 3 years: to build a strong pharmaceuticals pipeline, address the litigation that is outstanding, continue to reduce their debt, and implement new radical operating model that will provide the direct ownership method, which we reported on 2 weeks ago, the ability to get decisions closer to the farmer levels. They're sticking with their high impact, mission driven life science company motive, but stated here that even though the forecast is for these costs to save Bayer nearly $2.1 billion, they're not looking to spin off or sell off any of their divisions, just simply looking to provide an extra streamlined approach throughout their structure. They want, again, to get the decisions being made closer to the farmer level themselves. After, according to Bill's words, exactly 10 blockbuster years, the company itself had barely been able to maintain market status for the next 10 years due to legal risks and other related uncertainties. Bayer aims to reduce those by updating its strategy and pursuing potential settlements in some of the cases that are out there. Additionally, the company plans to address its debt and wants to move towards an A rating, boosting that rating with profitability growth and more secured positioning. So it sounds like the CEO in his first couple of weeks, Delaney, is stepping right in to put the company in the right direction.
Yeah, I had heard rumors that there were some big changes coming with this new CEO, so none of these things surprise me, but thanks for reporting on that for us here today, Tanner.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing I had to report on for our listeners here is some updates to the USDA's livestock marketing rules. The new market integrity rule is the latest major milestone, according to Secretary Vilsack, to strengthen USDA's oversight of livestock marketing. He said farmers will have stronger protections against deceptive contracts and retaliatory tactics from meat processors under this new rule. The new rule, which takes effect on May 6th, is part of the USDA's initiative for transparency and fair play in livestock marketing. And this rule also coincided with the White House's announcement of a strike force against unfair and illegal pricing. They said that President Biden is committed to making sure corporations are held accountable when they try to rip off Americans, and that includes American ranchers. But as the latest milestone in the USDA's oversight of livestock marketing, Vilsack said there's still more to come. This is just the latest piece of the puzzle, and it's really intended to provide clearer and more effective standards in prohibiting discrimination, retaliation, and deception by meat companies. We don't have a lot of other details as of yet, but the market integrity rule is available on the Agricultural Marketing Services website on USDA. It provides a summary of what the rule looks like, as well as some supporting documents that you can link and find the full rule if you have interest in reading it for yourself, Tanner.
Yeah, I was looking at that as well. So it leaves the only last headlines that I have coming out of the Gaza region. The U.S. and Jordan airdropped more food into Gaza amid warnings of that hundreds of thousands of people are on the brink of famine. U.S. ally Israel continues to obstruct the bulk of aid deliveries that the United Nations have called upon, stating that they are intentionally starving Palestinians in the Strip as a part of their military conduct. Meanwhile, the Biden administration and officials have conveyed their frustrations over the unacceptable situation in the Gaza region. They are continuing to work with Israeli cabinet members to get a ceasefire negotiated. Israeli forces have fired at people waiting for aid, which makes that situation a little bit unbearable. Eyewitnesses said that more than 100 people were killed when Israeli troops opened fire during one of the air aid deliveries. The Hamas said Tuesday that any prisoner exchange would not likely happen until a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip would be negotiated. So negotiators are continuing to work on securing a deal. They are looking to do this prior to Ramadan, which starts in less than a week. But that's what I've got for headlines today.
Well, I think aside from taking a look here at the markets, the only other headline I wanted to mention is crop insurance prices. Again, we teased these last week as February was settling out the month, but we do have confirmation that most of the Corn Belt's insurance price for the 2024 season is $4.66 a bushel for corn and $11.55 per bushel for soybeans. These are substantially lower prices than what we've seen in recent years. And for a corn producer, Tanner, with an average production history or APH of 225 bushels per acre with an insurance policy of 85% coverage, they can expect to have $891 of insured revenue at those levels. That compares to $1,130 in 2023. So definitely on the corn side, seeing a substantial difference year to year here, down 21% from 2023, which just means marketing is all that much more important. And as we take a look at the overnight markets here today, they are certainly not giving producers a lot of marketing opportunities. May corn in the overnight unchanged on the board at 426. May soybeans down 0.75 cents at 1148 1/4. Taking a look at the wheat contracts this morning, May Chicago wheat down 4 1/4 cents at 546. May hard red winter wheat down 6 3/4 cents at 562. And May spring wheat down 4 1/4 cents in the overnight at 651 1/4. As we take a look at the livestock markets here on this Wednesday morning, April live cattle will open at $1.88. April feeder cattle at $257.17, and April lean hogs will open this morning at $85.17 1/2. To kick things over for today's interview, Tanner, we're chatting with Julie Christensen from Bushel to talk about their State of the Farm report. So let's turn over to that conversation. Well, folks, as we consider the state of the farming industry, we thought who better to talk about it than Julie Christensen, a product marketer for Bushel, who has just released their Bushel 2024 State of the Farm report. Julie, we're excited to have you on the podcast today to dive into that report more in depth with us and our listeners.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So, Julie, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with Bushel's State of the Farm report, this has been an ongoing report. This isn't the first time you've put it out there, but talk to us at a high level about why this report is put together.
Sure. So the survey was actually started in 2017 by FarmLogs, and FarmLogs was acquired by Bushel in a couple of years ago and is now the platform that we call Bushel Farm. And the goal of our survey is really twofold. We want to better understand the needs, concerns, and preferences of row crop farmers. They are our customers, and they're also the customers of the agribusinesses we serve. And then we also want to lift those farmers' voices up and make sure that they're heard by sharing the report with farmers so you can hear from their peers as well as their agribusiness partners.
So for those that are contributing to this report, are they Bushel Farm customers, or how do you get your source of information?
Yeah, so some of them are Bushel Farm customers, and we also put the survey out in other channels where farmers can find the report. So this year we got about 900 farmers that responded to our survey. And interesting fact about some of those folks that responded, 40% of them said they have aggressive growth plans for their farm in the next 5 years. So that's kind of an interesting piece. We've got some of the larger next gen growth oriented farmers who are completing this survey.
So 900 farmers from across the United States, Julie, or are there specific states you're focused on?
Nope, they are across the United States. Of course, we do see a higher level of response from states that are typically farming states. So regions that are higher would be, the Midwest and the Southern Plains, just as representative of farms in the United States, but they're across the U.S.
So as you look at the results, you kind of mentioned that one thing that stuck out is the aggressive growth plans for some of your recipients. What are some other things that stuck out this year in your responses?
Yeah, I think one of the really interesting things is that there is aggressive adoption of technology by younger and growing farmers. We saw that really in three different sections of the survey. We talked a little bit about farm software and their utilization of that, as well as technology that they're using for grain marketing and grain payments. I could be glad to share some statistics with you if that'd be helpful.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. And I'm curious, did artificial intelligence come up at all in any of the responses or questions? Because I think that was one Tanner and I both heard a lot of feedback on from farmers at Commodity Classic.
Yeah, that is not an area that we delved into specifically in this survey. We did ask more questions about, apps that they're using for certain activities on the farm, but we didn't get as specific to talk specifically about AI.
So as you do dive deeper into your responses of more technology being used, what were some of those examples?
Yeah, so farm software as a whole, we asked what activities they used farm software for, and then we also gave them a chance to say, I don't use any apps or software, right? And it was interesting that only 3% of folks that are under 40 said that they don't use any apps or software at all for farm-related activities. So that means 97% of them are using at least one app or software tool to help with their farm, whether that be for weather, accounting, financial record keeping, farm management, grain marketing. We gave them probably a list of 9 or 10 options, and then they could also write them in as well. So high utilization of apps and software, particularly by that group that's under 40. We also dug a little deeper, wanting to know a little bit more about the value that software and apps have created for those farmers. Did it make their life easier? Did it increase their revenues, lower their costs? And we learned that the majority of respondents said convenience was the greatest source of value for them, right? But those under 40, again, the next generation here that's coming up, said increasing revenues and lowering costs were equally as important as convenience. So I think that's something for all of us in the industry to think about, that convenience is going to rule. It's top of mind. And no matter how many awesome things a software or app can do, if it isn't easy to use and it doesn't make the farmer's life easier, it's probably not going to be valued.
I think that's so top of mind for me right now. I was just talking to a farmer about a mobile application earlier today, and he said, I think it's probably a great tool, but it's not user-friendly and easy for me to use. So it's a coincidence. I think we're having this conversation after that. Julie, I'm curious to learn too, you know, as you look at these reports dating back to 2017, do you guys also look at greater trends and shifts over time from where we were at in 2017 to where we were at today in 2024?
We try to look at some of that. We have, because the survey was started by Farmlogs and then inherited by Bushel, we've changed our focus a little bit. So we've changed some of our questions. But as we continue to do these year over year, we'll definitely be looking at those trends.
As you've dove deeper into the analysis, you've talked about the uses of technology and so forth. What else is another key item that you've noticed in the responses from your recipients?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about grain marketing as well with them. And a couple of things that jumped out at me, you know, in reference to that grain marketing section would be a little over 65% of the farmers that are under 60 said they're willing to leave an open order or a firm offer with their grain buyers, right? So they're willing to say, hey, if the market hits at this price, go ahead and sell a certain amount of grain for me for a certain delivery period. That's pretty high. And then one out of three respondents said that they were likely or likely to submit those offers or sell grain through an app or website. That's something when you talk about Delaney year over year, you know, we're certainly seeing traction in our own environment, but it was interesting to see that also mimicked in the survey itself that, you know, one out of three likely or very likely to submit an offer through an app or website. That's pretty high. And when you look at those younger producers again, and those with high growth plans, that likelihood of submitting an offer or selling grain through an app or website rose to 50%. So they're definitely looking at innovative ways to manage their time and their money and hit the market when those opportunities present themselves. As we all know, things are tight this year, and everybody's looking for the best way to make the most of their dollar and to take advantage of opportunities when they can. So that was another one that we saw for grain marketing.
Julie, do you think that this is telling of maybe future reports and what we will expect to see there? Or did farmers give any indication of how these are continuing to shift their operations?
We did talk a little bit about, I'm going to start over on this one, okay? Since we can do that. Let me just think for 2 seconds here about how to phrase this. I think we definitely will see trends and that things in this report 5 years from now will look very different. I think there's no question that technology is changing all industries. And I think farming is one of those that we've already seen a lot of changes, and I think we'll continue to see changes as we go forward.
Can our listeners still contribute in responses to this survey, or are the results closed until that is conducted next year?
Yeah, the results are in and the report is done. We usually do the survey in late November, December, so we can get that report done and out usually in time for Commodity Classic is our goal in March or the 1st of March typically. So we would be glad to share the survey with you next year. We'd like to share it with all your listeners though.
Sure. If our listeners do want to participate in it next year, is there a way that they can sign up on a waiting list or keep an eye out for next year's report?
That's a great idea. It's not something I have available today. It's something I could certainly get to you, though, for future episodes if you'd like to share it, or we can reach out to you next year when the survey gets ready to be sent out.
Absolutely. If our listeners are curious more about Bushel, how best do they look up information about what you guys have going on?
Yeah, not only can they learn more about Bushel, they can also get this full report. Even though they maybe weren't able to lend their voice to it this year, they can get the full report and learn more about us at bushelfarm.com. So they'll see a little footer on that website where they can download the full report and then, of course, explore. There are a couple of different ways that Bushel actually serves farmers. So one is an app that we provide to their grain and ag retail providers, and then they distribute that app to their farmers at no cost, where the farmer can get 24/7 access to their bids and account information. They can also submit grain offers, e-sign contracts, and actually even get paid digitally And then we have a Bushel Farm farm management software, and that's that bushelfarm.com. But they can learn about both on that site.
There you go, listeners. What a great resource for us to keep an eye on agriculture and where trends are heading. So go check out the State of the Farm report for yourself. And don't forget, we've got some fun and exciting changes coming your way here in about a week on the Ag News Daily podcast. So stick with us this week and be ready and excited for what is new and coming your way. Right, Delaney?
That's right, Tanner. I don't think I could have said it any better myself. So I'm not going to add anything else other than should we let the listeners go?
Let's let them go.